alcoholic. And thank you for asking me to speak here tonight. And congratulations to everyone who picked up a chip and enjoyed your story as well. Thanks for sharing that. My sobriety date is December 16th, 1984. And I just celebrated 28 years sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. And that means I'm getting old. I'm almost, I'll be 48 this year in 2013. And I was 19 years old when I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was the best. Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my whole life, and it's why I'm sober and why I have anything worth anything in my life, really. That's the truth. And I grew up in Iowa, northeast Iowa, town of 500 people, surrounded by cornfields and cows and pigs, and there was no stoplight in town, and it was in the middle of nowhere, you know. And it was a good place to grow up, really. There was a lot of close friends that I had, you know. It was a small community, and there was really a lot to do, actually, you know, a lot of fishing and camping and just, you know, goofing off outdoors all the time. I look back on that and really enjoyed that part of growing up in that area. My family wasn't too cool. There wasn't lots of love in my family, like the first speaker was talking about. There was a lot of alcoholism and addiction and abuse and a lot of fear, you know, and intimidation, and I spent a lot of my childhood filled with fear, you know, just really afraid of what my dad would do next, or my crazy uncle, or my drunken grandfather, or all three of them together at the same time, totally smashed, you know. I never knew, and there was a lot of violence and in my house, and other parts of my family, and it just wasn't a picnic growing up for me. And I said not blaming my alcoholism on that, but I just wasn't right as a kid, you know. And I'm pretty sure that the environment didn't help that much, or had some effect on that. The way that I thought, the way that I felt, was affected by that, and I was very insecure, and was very worried about what other people thought about me, and it was also because it was a small town. Everybody knew my family situation, and it was embarrassing, and I would get picked on and all this kind of stuff, and it was just it was horrifying a lot of times, you know, the stuff that would happen in front of other people, in front of the community. And so I was just, I had all this like worry, fear, insecurity, anger, you know. I just was filled with those negative emotions a lot. And on the flip side of that, I was I had this arrogant part to me, and I considered myself to be smarter than everybody, and to be I just thought I knew more than everybody all the time, or like I had a deeper understanding of life or something than everybody, you know. I always thought that, and I was just real critical of my family and friends and everybody around me, and I was very sarcastic, and I had a big mouth, I started drinking when I was 15, I just started off drinking in a way that I just got smashed from the very beginning all the time. I drank to the point of blacking out starting at the age of 15, and before 15, I started drinking NyQuil at the age of 12, and but that was like isolation NyQuil drinking, you know. It was like I didn't get in any trouble. I just passed out on the couch, you know, becoming one of my family members, you know. And then, you know, the alcohol started at 15, and I would black out, puke a lot, destroy people's property on a regular basis, make fun of people, mouth off to everybody, get the shit beat out of me, you know. I couldn't back up my mouth, especially when I was really drunk, you know. That doesn't work very well. You know, I just made a lot of people really irritated with me. And I just wasn't nice, you know. I lied all the time and stole and would destroy your stuff and try to sleep with your girlfriend and, you know, steal your booze, and just, it was just a mess. And I sort of tried to perfect acting like a good boy, you know, like this innocent good boy, you know, like getting in. It was just all this manipulation stuff that I figured out. And after getting drunk at 15, I became, you know, totally obsessed with alcohol, with getting alcohol. I did whatever I could to get more alcohol. It was pretty easy to get alcohol. I would work for farmers, you know, during the harvest season or the summer or whatever. I'd always find work, you know, usually farm work, and make pretty decent money as a kid. And I would get all this money. And I had this friend a year older than me, and he looked like Grizzly Adams at the age of 16, you know. I mean, he looked like he was like 38 or something. And he would never get turned down for, you know, buying booze. And we just had to go to the town 10 miles away where people didn't know us, you know, and he'd go in any bar or store and get served. And so I was like the money guy. He was the older looking guy. And we had a couple other friends, and that was our scheme. I got in car accidents and, you know, would get physically injured, and I'd drink enough to where I'd puke for hours on end till I was like throwing up blood or something, you know. And my dad stopped drinking. He went to treatment when I was 14, and he stopped drinking, and I started drinking alcoholically at the age of 15. We had a real happy house, you know. And he was just kind of a mean sober jerk, you know, and I was a mean drunken jerk, and it wasn't a good situation, and we even got physical with each other at times, you know, got into fights and stuff. And my poor mom is a saint, you know. I mean, she really is a really good person, and she was in the middle of putting up with all that shit for me and him, and it was bad, you know. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with me, you know. I didn't think there was anything wrong with what I was doing. I mean, there was a few times where I had caution. You know, I remember I tried to run over this girl that was a year ahead of me in high school at a farm party, because previously, like a year previous, she kicked me in the balls at a football game at high school behind the stadium. I was like, I was totally stoned on dope, you know, on marijuana. And I was like, I was just walking real slow, and she came out of the shadows and kicked me in the balls. And I held on to the resentment for a year, and I tried to run her over at this party. And I almost ran her over, you know. It's a good thing that the wheels were on grass, you know. The tires were spinning. I couldn't go as fast as I wanted to go, you know. And the next morning I woke up and I had caution. I remembered what I did. And I was worried for about a half hour. I contemplated, you know, that I almost ran this chick over. And then after a half hour I was like, oh, well, what's for breakfast, you know. I just had stuff like that that came up where I was like, wow, you know, that's not right, you know. I better stop drinking, I thought a couple of times. I didn't do anything about it. I got out of high school, and I didn't care about school the whole time I was in school. I just cared about drinking and having fun. I didn't care about my family. I really just didn't care about much of anything. And I didn't have any goals, didn't have any motivation. I didn't know what I was going to do when I left high school. I didn't think about it at all. I didn't think about going to college. I didn't think about getting a job. I didn't think about anything. I just got drunk all the time. And I got out of high school. I was totally lost. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I didn't have any plan. That was another moment of caution. I was like, wow, all my classmates graduate and they're going to college and stuff. I was like, huh, you know. I didn't realize I was supposed to make a plan, you know. And I was thinking, wow, that's really fucked up, you know. I didn't think about that. And now I can't come up with a plan like the last day of school, you know. I was like, hey, will you let me into your college, you know. So I just started wandering and drinking, and I left Iowa. I went to northern Florida, sort of up like between Ocala and St. Augustine. I had some family there, and I showed up and made a nuisance out of myself, and I drank till I passed out every night, is what I did. And I found a job, and I just drank, you know, all the time. If I wasn't working if I wasn't working or if I was awake, I was drinking until I pass out. Then I'd wake up and drink some more. And I just did that. And I became very lonely and very depressed. And I was really confused. I remember thinking, you know, there's no one to blame this shit on anymore. You know, my family's not here. You know, and I always had it in my head that it was my family's fault, my dad's fault, everybody's fault, you know, like my teachers, this, that, the other thing. You know, we were poor when I was a kid, it's that, you know, I had all this stuff in my head, and I realized, like, I'm an adult now and I'm by myself and I feel terrible, you know, what's up? So I decided to change that, and I moved back to Iowa. I just left Florida and moved back to Iowa. I needed a change, and I figured that would help. And I got there, and I continued to drink a lot and be a pest to my family, and just fell right back into the same cycle, you know, of blaming and drinking, and just it was just terrible. So I left there and I moved to Minnesota, and I just continued the same, you know. And I found this job, and I ran into some guys that I knew when I was, you know, still a teenager back when I was growing up in Northeast Iowa. I moved in with them. You know, I ran into my first day at my new job. They were working there just by chance. We ran into each other. They invited me to move in, and there were eight of us, alcoholics and drug addicts, living in this one-bedroom apartment in this building that was getting ready to be condemned. And I remember the first day I moved in, my roommates noticed that these two guys moved into the apartment next to them. And as we were walking down the hallway of them to invite me into their apartment to live, they kicked in the door of the new roommates and beat them up and stole their bong and their marijuana. And those guys left. They never came back. You know, the guys that rented the apartment next door. That was a caution. I was like, that's not normal, you know. You know. My drinking really accelerated there big time. And I was just wasted all the time. I mean, pee your pants. Wasted, pass out on the street, get in fights, blackout, wake up places I didn't know where I was. It was bad, you know. And I stopped bathing, and I stopped washing my clothes, and I stopped eating for the most part. I didn't eat much, and I thought I was handsome and clean, and that I, you know, that things were cool, you know, that I was cool, and I really did. I really believed that, and I was just filthy. My clothes were filthy, and I was living the life of a scumbag, you know, my roommates, I was the drunk. My roommates were drug. They were into drugs. I always wanted to be more into drugs, but I couldn't be because my weak mind, I couldn't handle them. Like, I'd just take a toke of a joint and I would be like hallucinating my ass off, and I'd be scared to death, you know, for hours, you know, tripping out, you know, and thinking all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, I'd come out of that and think, holy shit, I'm never doing that again. You know, why do people like this? You know, like, my mind, I just couldn't handle it, you know? And, if I could have, I would have done more of that, but I couldn't do it, you know. And they were into drugs, like heavy duty, you know. And I thought I was better than them, you know. I was like judging them and thinking, look at me, I'm not like one of these scumbag drug addicts like these guys are, you know. And I remember, this is near the end of my drinking, I got wasted in this bar down the street. Like always, like every night. And it was late October in Minnesota. It was really cold out. And I was walking home from the bar, like stumbling, you know, swerving down the sidewalk. And I heard all this noise across the street. I looked over. And there they all my roommates. And they're tripping their butts off on acid that night. They were having like this acid party. And they were like, they were having a good time, you know. And they were making fun of me. And I went to flip them off and yell, fuck you at them. I did that in my body kept going, you know, like, hit my back of my head on the sidewalk, you know, passed out, you know, bam, knocked myself out. And I woke up in bed in the morning. My roommates told me they carried me up there and threw me in the bed, you know. They were more functional than me, you know. And, it's crazy. They weren't doing great. Don't misunderstand me, but at least they weren't, you know, on the street passed out, you know. And thinking I'm better, you know, I'm doing better. I was with one of my roommates and we were drinking and we were on this road trip and we were stealing tires off of a car, and the police came and arrested us. And this was my last night of drinking, and we were in very northern Iowa near the Minnesota border, this town, Mason City, Iowa. And I'd never been arrested before, and we got taken to this city jail, and I got put in an isolation cell, and I wanted to kill myself. I was trying to think of ways to kill myself, and there was no way. They gave me paper towel coveralls to wear, you know, like these white ones with this little zipper right here, you know, and the only way was to ram my head into the cinder block wall. And I didn't do it because I knew it would hurt like hell. You know, I was like, I can't do that. You know, that's not cool. And one of the jailers suggested maybe I just lay down and go to sleep. And so I did that. And in the morning, I got fingerprinted and mugshot and all this stuff. And that night, I woke up in the middle of the night in the jail, and the jailers were beating this inmate across the hall from me. I mean, like severely beating this guy. For a long time, you know, and I remember just thinking, man, I'm next, you know. I didn't even care about the guy. I was like, I'm next, you know, like, I'm like, what's that? They didn't beat me up, you know, but I got booked into the county jail, and I got charged with a felony, and I got put in a jail cell with my roommate and two other guys. This one huge guy who was going to prison for stabbing this guy like multiple times. And he said he was going to eat my dinner. And I told him I would fight him for it. And I weigh 180 pounds right now. And then I weighed 140 pounds or something. You know, I'm just like a stick, a walking stick. I remember he laughed his butt off and told me I could keep my dinner. And The other guy was an older guy who was going to prison for embezzling money from a company. And he told me about alcoholism, this older guy. And he told me he was an alcoholic, and he told me what alcoholism is. And I don't remember what he said exactly, but it made sense to me. Him telling me about alcoholism and being an alcoholic made sense to me. And I realized that I'm an alcoholic, like listening to this guy, talking to this guy. And I realized I was in jail because I'm an alcoholic. I realized, like, everything that was me was my alcoholism. Everything that was happening was my alcoholism. And that was the first time I was willing to think about that or admit that. And I remember I cried. I had this moment of clarity or something, or this experience, spiritual experience or something, where I cried and I felt better, you know, afterwards. And I remember this huge, tough jailer came by and saw me crying and just shook his head like, pussy, you know, like, I was like, wow, man, that blows. It caught me crying. Then the guy that helped me wanted me to take hot, soapy showers with him. And I was like, no, you know, I'm not going to do that, you know. Like, and he kept bugging me about it, you know, like he was going to wear me down, you know. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I started to think, jail's not cool, you know. It's not a good place to be. And I don't want to be in jail. I don't want to go to prison. That had this impact on me. You know, that guy wanting me to take the shower with him, and the other guy wanting my food. And just, there was an inmate in that jail that weekend who got the fluorescent light bulb out of the ceiling and ate it, and went off to the emergency room. And there was another 18-year-old kid that was booked into that same jail that weekend that was raped and beaten to death the weekend that I was in there. And it, you know, I was like, man, you know, I'm 19, I'm 140 pounds. This ain't going to be good. It's not going to be good for me, you know. I'm not going to be able to protect myself. And I didn't like the idea of having to a locked door between me and society. Like, I realized, like, I was locked in there to keep the community safe. And I was like, that's really fucked up, you know? Like, I don't, you know, that's not who I think I am or my idea of who Todd Holliday was going to be, you know? And that was my bottom. And I haven't had a drink since then. And I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous by an act of my higher power. I got out of jail, and I had my trial about a month later. I got 8 more days in jail. And, man, my roommates were real fun that 8 days. Man, oh, man. The guy that had the bunk below me would kick my mattress over and over again. I'd flop around in the top bunk, and he would read letters. He was like almost 30, and he would read letters from his like 13-year-old girlfriend out loud to me. You know, I mean, like this sexual letters. I was like, holy Christ, you know, like this. And this other guy always wanted to beat me up in the cell, you know. And I remember he was cussing me out, and in my face I'd smoke. Then I took it. You could smoke in jail. I took a huge drag of my cigarette and then shrouded his head in smoke, you know. And the deputies came to the jail cell and told me that they were going to throw us both in the hole if we didn't knock it off, you know. That's was a nice time in jail. And I went back to my roommates, and I went back to my job, and I didn't drink, didn't take any drugs, and I realized I've got to get out of here. My roommates were dealing stolen weapons, drugs, and they were harboring runaway teenage girls in the house. And I was like, and I was stone cold sober now, and I was taking an inventory, and I was like, yeah. Some guys came over to buy drugs, and one of them was being really loud and obnoxious, and I got really angry, and I picked him up, and I threw him off the back porch into a snowbank, and he started crying like a child. And I went to my bedroom, and I shut the door, and I said, I got to leave. You know, I got to get out of here. I can't be here and be sober and be violent and be around all this shit, you know. And that was my breaking point. And I went to a town about 30 miles away, and I got a job as a welder in this factory. And I found a room to rent in this old guy's house. Real nice old guy had a room for rent. And I moved out from my roommates in the middle of the night while they were all sleeping so they wouldn't beat me up. At like 3 in the morning, I packed all my stuff and left and never said a word. And I went to my new place. And my first day at work, they put me with another welder to train me with the job there. And his name's Dennis, and he was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And he 12-stepped me that night. And he was 28. He'd been sober since he was 18. I was 19 at the time. And we got to talking, and he revealed to me that he was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him my crazy story. And he took me to my first AA meeting in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, this little town in Minnesota, just south. It was a rural area just south of Minneapolis, St. Paul, about 50 miles. And Dennis saved my life. He really did. Nothing short of that. And by carrying the message of AA to me and by caring about me and caring about what happened to me. And we're still very good friends and talk and visit each other when we can. And come to find out, he was saving his ass by saving me. He was living with he was married, and it was a bad marriage, and he was in the middle of getting a divorce and all this stuff. And he later told me he was just trying to save his own ass by taking care of me, you know. But nonetheless, he saved my life. And he introduced me to AA at the first meeting I was at. I remember I felt a sense of peace, and I felt like I had come home for the first time ever in my life. And I knew that this was a safe place. I knew that the guys at the meeting were honest about their sobriety. I could tell that I was going to be okay in Alcoholics Anonymous if I stayed involved. And he introduced me to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the steps, to other people, other meetings. He helped me, oh my God, he helped me do so many things. And I mean, we would always be together, you know. We worked together. He taught me how to play tennis. We would ride bikes together. We'd go jogging together. He'd invite me to all of his family stuff, you know. I like became a part of his family, and he made fun of me with no mercy, you know. And he reamed me out for my behavior and my thinking with no mercy. I mean, he would say to me, "Why do you have to be such a baby? You know, why are you being an idiot?" You know, I'd be like, "What do you mean?" You know, and he'd explain it to me, you know. And but the cool thing was, I knew he wasn't being mean. I respected him, and I knew that he cared about me, and I knew what would follow that comment is a talk and an explanation, you know. And it was good, because I was a kid. I was 19. I was immature. I didn't know what I was doing, you know. And he was he was there, you know, to help me with all that stuff. And well, it's been a long journey since then. It's I moved back to Florida when I was about 3.5 years sober, 4 years sober. I moved to the Pinellas County over there and got involved in AA over there. And I know so many people in Pinellas County in AA all these years later. And my home group's Common Solution on Monday night. And I try to help others. I have a few guys, they call me their sponsor, they call me. And we talk, and I say, "Why do you have to be such an idiot?" You know? Life is, it's really great, you know? And if anybody would have pulled me aside when I hit bottom and first got an AA and said, you'll later be married to this beautiful person who's a loving, smart person. You'll have a kid who's a really cute, good kid. And you'll have a good job, and you'll have good friends, and you'll feel at peace. I would have just, I don't know, man, I would have fainted or something. I wouldn't have, you know, no way, you know. I got much more in sobriety than I ever thought I needed or thought I wanted. And there's been hard times, you know, in sobriety, and AA carried me through that. People in AA carried me through that. Higher power carried me through that, those hard times. And I'm happy to be able to, I think what the first speaker was talking about, to be able to be a family member, you know, to be a dad. My wife and I adopted our son. He'll be 2 in March, and we adopted him, took him home from the hospital when he was 2 days old. And I remember when I held him the first time in the nursery in the hospital, and I looked at him and I thought, boy, you better stay sober now. You know, you got a lot of responsibility here. And that's what I thought, you know. I was like, man, another very serious reason to stay sober. I don't want to be a bad dad, you know. And that's been the most difficult experience of my sobriety, and the most rewarding is being a father. That little kid, you wouldn't think someone that weighs 30 pounds could drive you totally berserk, you know, but man, sometimes I just want to scream fuck at the top of my lungs, you know, like FML, you know, like, you know, like. But then, you know, that's a fleeting thing, and he comes over and smiles at me and crawls up in my lap and kisses me, you know, and says hug, you know, and wants a hug, and I told myself that we would laugh together. I would make sure that me and my son would laugh together at least once every day, and we do that. I do that. I make a point that him and I have some fun together every day, that I make him laugh somehow every day. And it usually gets me laughing, you know, because his laugh is so genuine, it cracks me up, you know. It might be over boogers or, you know, something tickling him or something, but a fart, you never know. One of the things that's been a hard lesson and for me being sober is just letting go and letting things be the way they are and just letting things happen. And that's been a real challenge. And I've thought I've learned that lesson over about 100 million times. Maybe I'll have to keep learning it. That's okay, you know. But that's been a real challenge, is just to not worry and not try to plan everything and just, you know, be happy and let things happen. And it's best when it happens that way, you know. For me, that's when I try to force something, it usually turns out pretty bad, you know. Especially like a relationship, you know, in sobriety, trying to force a situation, get myself in a relationship with somebody or something, and usually I got like the figure eight keyed into my car on both sides and on the hood of my car, you know. And I'd stop at stoplights, and a carload of guys would pull up next to me, and I would see them all looking at my car, and then they would look up at me, and I'd look at them, and we'd be like, yeah, you know, like nod at each other, you know, like, you know, that's the kind of crap I'd get myself into, you know. But you know, I learned my lessons there, I think, and I let go of all that, and I decided just be sober, be happy, you know, don't worry about this stuff. And I was in a in the Chicago airport, and I was on the cell phone talking to Bill, and this woman walked by, and I really liked her, and we ended up on the same plane together, and I sat next to her on this 35-minute flight. And she was on a business trip from Brazil. She's from Brazil, grew up her whole life there. And now we're married with this adopted kid, you know. And it's so crazy how those things happen, you know. And you know, it was by letting go and letting things happen. And That's been great. She's funny. She's a normal person. And whenever I get like really grouchy or something, she was like, you know, don't worry about tonight. I got Lucas. Maybe you could go to the meeting on Thursday night. You know, like she's like, you know, get out of here. You know, what's wrong with you? You know, kind of thing. She's really great about all that. When she first moved here and we got married, we were going to have some friends over, and some of her friends who were like social drinkers, and she went across the street to a liquor store and she bought a little bottle of, I can't remember, some sort of hard liquor that her and her girlfriends were going to have a drink together or something. And she showed it to me and she goes, I bought the real little bottle just in case. You know, like in case I wanted it, you know, and I said, if I want a drink, I'll go to the fucking liquor store across the street. You know, I'll get a big bottle. You know, I was like, I don't know, you know, that just cracked me up, you know, that I thought it was really cool that she was trying, you know, to understand. But that's funny, you know. And that's another great thing for me in Alcoholics Anonymous is I don't feel... I'm what as the book describes, I'm neutral. I don't want, if she has a social drink or whatever, it's fine, doesn't bother me. I don't want it. I'm not envious. I don't, you know, it's nothing. And I think that's another, guy has a cat in his pocket. A rooster. Oh, okay. Well, I know I'm over my time, so I'm going to stop and say thank you for asking me to speak. And it's good to see everybody here at this group. I moved to Tampa. I live in St. Pete now. I moved to Tampa several years ago, and I absolutely loathed living in this city of Tampa. And I was so damn lonely. And I think Bill introduced me to the Tampa Bay Young People's Group, and it saved my hide, the Tampa Bay Young People's Group. You know, these young guys that came in and were getting sober, and they're totally nuts, you know. And Dog over there, and Ryan, and all these guys, you know. And It really energized me and made me feel better, you know. And so I have a really special place in my heart for this group and what it did for me, you know, when I lived here. And it sucked living in Tampa, you know. God, I hated it. But anyway, Happy New Year. Goodbye.